Amy.
I'm Wendell.
And I'm Patrick.
And
this is
Yes
But Why
Podcast. So I'm here with Patrick.
Hello.
And Wendell.
Hi.
And
hey.
They're my co-hosts here for the Yes But Why podcast. And so thank you for being with us, Brian.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited.
I'm good. I'm glad. And hey.
It's great to talk to you again, Amy. It's been
a
minute.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was telling them that I met you at the training camp workshops.
Yes. I'm just seeing some updates on the Facebook this past few days, weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. There was a new class that came through that happened in New Orleans maybe, I think, a week ago. And that was,
they all had
a wonderful time, you know. I saw heartfelt photos and stuff like that. I didn't get to see it, so that was sad. But it was my first time not teaching it because I was home with the baby. And also,
fair.
I ended up getting a gig teaching a camp here. Mm-hmm. So I'm teaching like a comedy camp. I'm teaching sketch comedy to 13-year-olds. It's really great.
That's so cool. How is the sketch comedy of the team?
Very good, laden with heavy messages, which I think is really funny. Like, it's very, they're like moral plays, which I really enjoy.
Really?
Yeah.
Like after school, or those old, you get home from school and they're like, hey, kids, let's talk about. Yeah, right.
Yeah, the ABC after school special, for sure.
Yeah.
Where you'd learn all about, they'd show you how if you did blank, that would ruin your life. Yeah.
No, that was not what I would have expected, but that's cool to hear.
Yeah, it was
They got something to talk about, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like discrimination and
a lot of stuff about Benghazi.
Yeah, oh, well.
Benghazi, huh?
It's the time.
No, there's no political stuff, you guys.
It's
about, you know, it's about regular things that kids are dealing with. It's like, you know, somebody doesn't love me, or one of them is just bad pickup lines. They just say bad.
Do 13-year-olds have pickup lines?
Yeah, they're hilarious.
Oh, wow.
I don't think they use them. I think they're sort of like, they're what 13-year-olds call jokes.
Hey, girl, you're making my spinner fidget.
I'll think of one later in the episode.
That's so good.
It's
I love it.
It's adorable. I thought I was really nervous about it, but turned out to be great.
Yeah, that sounds like a blast.
You ever teach kids, or you only teach adults?
I have not. My partner and I were looking for something to do. So I have cousins who are from like a few months. My little cousin was just born, up to 8. So my oldest cousin is 8 years old, and she was just asking us about spending some Uncle Brian and Nicole time, because every time we're home, and I'm from Cleveland, the family's all together, and she likes us, I guess. And we're like, yeah, that sounds great. We'd love to. And we're like emailing with her parents some ideas, like, we could go to this, Women in Aeronautics Museum, and like, we always think of positive educational things to do. And then, like, the last one, we're like, we could like write a play, because she has all these creative things she does. And she's like, get that, like, let's write a play together. So we were working with her to write a play. So she does musicals and things, and we're like, so Nicole came up with all these prompts for her, and I don't know, we're working on this with her, and it was super fun. And then the family was all at vacation at the beach a few weeks ago, and she'd held auditions and cast all the parts and put on this play. That she wrote. It was like 10 minutes long, but it was a magical experience for me. I thought that was so fun to do this with our cousin. But not quite the same experience. But yeah, I would love to. I thought that was really just amazing how, like, her brain worked, and how hard it was to keep her focus, but generally she's like so creative and interesting, and like, yeah, I would be interested to do more of that, but not really a thing that I do. Yeah.
I was actually very surprised by the level of sort of like adultishness that these 13-year-olds had. Like when I, because at first I didn't know how old they were. I was told they were teens. That's all I got. And I was like, great.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was just teaching them. And then one day they informed me in this one group that I was working in that they were all 13 except for one girl who was 16. And I was just like, huh, okay. Ooh. And that was like, their jokes were the most on point. Like, to that, where they'd punch up an idea and it'd be the smartest move you could. And you'd be like, how do you... Like, all I did was vaguely explain three beats. How do you get the idea of it so innately? Like... They just did such a great thing. And then I actually told the head of the camp this because he was real excited to have a comedy part. This is the first time they're having it. And one of the kids came up to me. We were rehearsing the sketch that they had written. And he comes up to me and he goes, Miss Amy, I have to fall again. And I was like, what do you mean? And he goes, I only fall two times. I mean, if I don't fall a third time, don't you think the audience is going to be disappointed? And I was like, you're right. You're totally right. And we found a place to make his character fall again. It was like, you're not wrong, Anthony. That was exactly the right move.
This was a test and you passed, Anthony.
It was just so crazy, just this moment. But Miss Amy, shouldn't I fall again? I was like, yeah. Yeah, you should.
And technically, from a higher place.
Is it true? Right. Right. Literal heightening.
Yeah. A bigger ladder.
Is it true?
Forget to tell you the
number. Is it true, like a theater?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been working at the Georgetown Palace Theater, which is a city north of Austin. Just, like, takes me about 45 minutes to an hour to get there. Yeah. But it is sweet. Nice. It's a beautiful little town. The theater's in this, like, historic downtown section, so it looks all quaint and adorable. I feel real fancy. It reminds me of the internship that I did at Portland Stage Company. But it was it's just, like, small town, you know, that kind of thing. You know, to that end, what's the...
I grew up in small town theaters.
Tell me about them. Tell me about the small town theaters you started with.
Now it sounds like a segue, but I do, I will, but yeah, I definitely know that thing. Like, I started acting when I was 8 and would do more like, you know, my parents would pay money and everyone gets a role. Like, they, you know, would write a bunch of, now the emperor has 100 tailors, and all the kids sing along. And, but yeah, eventually I guess by middle school, I was doing more community theater. Because middle school, I know I was the Artful Dodger. That was a better role. I would be like a pirate in Peter Pan or whatever most of the time. And but those were all community theaters. Like, we grew up in the way, I wouldn't even call suburbs of Cleveland. It was like more rural almost. Like, we had neighborhoods. And I always say, my town didn't have cows, but we were next to the town with cows, so there was a lot of, you know, it was definitely more rural. But then one theater company I did a lot with was in, it was a community building, but it felt like a church, and there was a church across the street, and the reverend of that church did theater with us, and so it was like that kind of feel. And then I did another one that was a town down that was in their like municipal building. Like, the firemen were always there, and they built this whole theater out of, like, you know, one of those like gymnasium multi-purpose stages. Mm-hmm. But they had, you know, lighting that would rotate around, and they were real serious about it. I feel like that's a very unique type of thing where these communities, you know, like a lot of the plays are like what, you know, the old auntie and the on the board, you know, she's always wanted to be Dolly or whatever, and right. So we're doing Hello Dolly, and it's these tight communities, and there's always a lot of gossiping and whatever, and you know, I was a kid coming up through that, but even by the time I was in high school, like, a lot of my friends were in theater. I was friends with a lot of older people and grown adults, and like, just used to being around adults, and I feel like that it's both the theater and that aspect definitely had a bigger impact on my, experience of childhood and growing up in that a community, but definitely small town theaters is that's my bread and butter. where I came from.
Wow, that's interesting. And you're not a sociopath at all. So, like, children talking to adults, that doesn't make you want to murder everybody. This is good. This is good to know. I'm worried about it.
Well,
I got a baby now. I'm raising him. I don't, you know, it's like, should I let him talk to Patrick? I don't know.
Never.
I think from like a 2017 lens, I think that is more scary. But, like, I found it so valuable. Like Rev Kev was so great, the Reverend, he was like Billy in Anything Goes, and he was all like those kind of leads, and I also had, I mean, I grew up good friends with the one of three out gay people in my high school, and I was just talking to a friend of mine about this here, like, one of the guys who is, he's in a bunch of shows at one of those two places was, you know, in 40s, gay man whose partner then they could not be married, but was getting deported back to Canada and was like super broken up about this. And I think my experience of like I was around people who had like real shit to deal with more than like then I'd go back to school and my friends in school were a assholes. I hung out with like just shitty boys in high school that I'm not proud of things I would say and do with them because they were shitty people, but like
high school
I think it was gave me this weird kind of good perspective on like what's important and what and you know they have experience in life, like I think they weren't they didn't turn me into monsters, they turned me into like a human being.
A responsible adult. Interesting. Excellent.
I hope so. I mean, it still took a while for that stuff to sink in, but I do I think it was net positive.
Good. Yeah. So you said you grew up in Cleveland. This town that you're talking about is outside of Cleveland?
I grew up in a township called Bainbridge, Ohio, which is no one would ever know. But yeah, and I did theater in these small towns near, like Bainbridge didn't have theater, but my parents would drive me 20 or 40 minutes away. And yeah, by the time I was in high school, I did some semi-professional theater and various things. Like I'd drive around town and do theater all over, but more of these things were, just these small town community theaters. And yeah, they're all way out east and outside of Cleveland.
Did you like
probably like 45 minutes from the city.
When you were in high school, did you like audition for real plays at like actual theaters and not just do high school theater?
So I never did school theater at my high school because it was terrible. Now they built this beautiful stage. But yeah, like it would be like literally our costumes were in a box under the teacher's desk all year. They did one musical a year. And so until my senior year, that teacher left the school, and I went to our principal and was like, hey, I'll direct a show for free, and you don't have to hire another drama person. And he was like, okay. And so I got to direct a play. I did Harvey, which I still enjoy. But I never really did theater in my high school, so I just did these community theater things. But I auditioned. It depends what you mean by real theater. It was mostly these community theater.
Yeah, community theater. I mean, it wasn't like high school teacher put you in a play.
Right. And I did do a small amount of more real theater, but mostly these community theater plays. Yeah.
So in the... Like, we're talking, you're a teenager. Were there any other teenagers involved at this community theater, like, at all?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Okay. Most of the musicals I did, especially the, like, summer musicals where I kind of started, were a lot of people my age. And then, during the year were more shows that were mixed ages all across the board. When I would meet a variety of different people in it. But the other thing about community theater is they tend to cast more age appropriately, right? So I was like Artful Dodger or whatever, but, so the summer shows would be all kids, so we'd get to play adults. Most of the other shows, like I had to play kids roles. Like I played, I can't remember. I was in the Sound of Music. I hate that musical, but I was the like 16-year-old boy, and I was like, I would play a lot of roles that were my age. There's like a lot of the, you know, if you're in high school, you play whatever Danny Zuko, or, you know, you play these, like, you know, older people, which I didn't do as much of.
I was going to say, did you play Danny Zuko?
No, I hate that, too. I mean, I was in a lot of musicals I don't like, but, yeah, no, I can't stand Grease.
All right.
About Grease, too?
Now you're hearing the real tea.
Oh, man. Woo! Deep cuts. What is happening now? Throwing down the gauntlet. Doesn't like Grease. Are you kidding me?
The musicals Brian hates.
Right? No. Oh, that's funny. Though, that being said, I believe I heard the teens talking about one of their high schools was going to do Grease and said they were going to cut out Grease Lightning because it was a dirty song.
It is.
And they didn't want to talk about
it. They can't say Pussy Wagon.
I guess they can't, but also they decided it's cool to drop an entire plot point. It's fine.
Yeah.
Why have a reason to have an argument as gentlemen? No reason. They just fought. It's fine.
Right, I can't. That's the thing. Like, I can't. I know of high schools doing Grease Junior, but, like, literally, there's nothing in that show you could do. Like, you cut the abortion and the drinking and the cigarettes and, like, what's left of that musical.
Yeah, the whole first half of, or one half of Summer Lovin' is a bunch of dudes asking if he, like, got aggressive with a girl on the beach. You know, like,
yep.
Like,
it's
like,
yeah.
Did you like, take it anyways?
You know.
Like, what, you know, yeah, like,
you know.
It's just them being really gross and...
Yeah,
yeah,
totally.
Parents are just
tell me more.
And then,
tell me more.
Yeah, Grease 2, which is even worse, features that whole song where he's like telling the girl they should bang because the world is ending. He like lies to her about the world ending to sleep with her. Not good life lessons for young men.
Or is it? Jesus. I'm sorry, everyone.
Or it's too good.
There's a solar eclipse coming up, and normally that a lot of people think the world's going to end every time that happens. So now it's time to cash in.
I'm banking on it.
You might as well find out who believes that and cross them off your Tinder list.
Yeah, you gotta like think about like...
Oh, my.
Yeah, the point of no return as well.
Wouldn't that be great on a dating site if there were like just three main questions you had to answer first to before you could see the profile? Like, it was like, do you think the earth is flat? Yes or no?
No. Lizard people. True? Not true.
Well, if you think the eclipse is bringing the apocalypse, there's probably a lot more.
Oh yeah.
It's probably, you know, it's like your whole life probably isn't like super structured around that one opinion, you know.
No, yeah, it's a gateway question is all.
It's a gateway question. Yeah, and that's why it's a gateway to your
profile.
Profile. Yeah, exactly.
You knock out the losers right away. Get them out of there.
Or you knock out the people you disagree with. Say you think the earth is flat and you're looking for another flatty to hang out with.
Hold on, do they call themselves flatties?
I think they call themselves flatmen.
We're flatmans.
Flatmen.
That sounds like that's a Fox TV show.
Flatmen?
The Flatmans. This Sunday, think, the Flatmans. Sorry.
Do you think the real the key to success in love is just believing the same things as your partner?
I mean, just the basic ones. You get to make up your own questions. Like, it doesn't always have to be the
flat.
You could come up with your, hey, listen, here are the
like,
top three things that matter the most to me. You know what I mean? Like, just certain little details where if it turned out 6 months into the relationship, you found out that this person thought A, that you'd be like, yeah, you know what? I'm no longer attracted to you in any way. This is over. So just get those out of the way straight up.
I probably shouldn't give any advice.
The deal breakers.
So. Yeah, deal breakers. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a troll, and he won't let you cross the bridge until you answer these questions three.
Write down date troll. Someone tried to...
I thought that was the beginning of your question. Like, here's what I need to know.
I remember going on a blind date one time, and about when the appetizers came out.
Sorry.
It's a blind date. It's like the worst form of dating.
So the appetizers.
Yeah, right as the appetizers come along, she quoted Napoleon Dynamite, and it had been like 7 years since that movie came out, and I was like,
oh, that was your deal breaker, huh?
Oh, you were like, against that. I thought you were gonna be for that.
No, I was not for that 1 week after that movie came out.
If someone drops a Ghostbuster reference, I'm in.
Wow, that's hard no on Napoleon Dynamite.
Wow, I mean, definitely not.
That got referenced to hell and back when it came out. Like, at least for my age group at the time, it was just, I went to middle school and we're all just doing Napoleon Dynamite impressions.
I mean, it is really tough, though, because I feel like as professional comedians, we know about comedy, but for most people, I think comedy just means referencing things they saw that were funny.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Repeating is pretty much just what they do.
Yeah, I still do it every now and then.
I mean, I repeat, like, in a conversation.
That's what the hoi polloi does.
Yeah. The hoi polloi. I love that word.
That's how me and my older brothers, like, crack each other up, is we'll just be like, hey, and then we'll just quote Dumb and Dumber from start to finish. Mm-hmm. We'll just swap lines. And
from start to finish.
From start to
finish. They go the entire 124 minutes.
Stage directions and
the worst part is, I think, I would like as, to like, an that. Improviser, like, I've never thought of myself as a particularly funny person, and I say that, and people are like, oh, Brian, you're so funny, like, I'm trying to get compliments. Which, by the way, I am trying to get compliments. I think among people, like, especially at work or whatever, my day job, like, people hear I do comedy, and they like, have this look of disappointment. Like, you do comedy? Because, like, I'm not an office funny person. And like, when I'm around people who are, like, reference funny people, like, I lose all the time. Like, I'm never... Like, I can't keep up, or I don't know what they're referencing. Like, I'm so bad in those environments. I think on stage, I'm pretty funny. Like, I think I'm good at, you know, creating dramatic tension and like, reading the... I'm good at things, but, or, like, getting jokes that I'm not even sure why it's funny until after and someone explained to me. Like, I think I'm good in improv settings, but... around reference comedy people, like, I look so dumb and I can't get a word in edgewise, and I'm always, like, overwhelmed by this expectation that I should be funny, and I'm so bad at that.
Yeah, it's a weird feeling, right? Like, the people make you feel not funny by repeating something someone else made that's funny.
Yeah, it's like everyone's homework with their comedy. Yeah, you know, like, I don't... I think
it's, sometimes it's like pop culture references versus, like, actual humor. You know what I mean? Like, they're not doing any work,
totally.
Right?
No, they're not
just
doing any
legitimately
work.
They're showing you a picture, or they're, like, reading the internet to you. Like, it's just what's happening in that moment to them. And I think that, unfortunately, part of the entertainment industry became just telling you things that already happened. So there's all sorts of, like, you know, things like MTV, where there's shows about other shows where they just talk about it, and you're like, okay. Wonderful. What does that have to do with... I care about this thing?
It'll just be like three random kinds of human being on a couch.
Yeah.
And they're just watching it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's one of the shows on MTV. I was like, I wanted to write something where it's just people looking at a TV. Like, it just backs out and it's... You're being watched. Like, they're watching you watch them watch other things.
They're watching you watch.
Wow, that's some Inception shit right there.
I
hate to drop this news.
Drop it.
Oh, and also reference a pop culture thing, but Mel Brooks beat you to that joke.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, shit, yeah, yeah.
Spaceballs,
that's right.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
You mean when they reverse the...
Yeah, absolutely.
Nailed the pop culture reference, though.
But the best part is, now pop culture... Well, there's two different things that I'll make the point of. Number one, pop culture references can make you friends because you immediately find out who's in your age group by referencing something, and then they're like, yeah, I also did that, and you're like, ah, you must be within 5 years age of me, whatever it is.
You're like, what's up, man? Where's the beef?
And then, yeah, exactly. And then they get it.
No one here was on board. Yeah.
I remember.
Welcome to 29 years of Wendell.
There was legitimately a part of my life where I told my parents I wanted to be the Where's the Beef lady. And maybe that's what I am meant to be, but I'm just not ready yet. I'm too young.
You just want to grow into a woman who is just dissatisfied with the...
I don't want to be her. I want to be a person who's an actress in a commercial that says "Where's the beef?" and everyone laughs and repeats
across
it.
The country all right. For your catchphrase.
Yeah, and even though I'm like a weird-looking 70-year-old woman, that's what I want to have happen.
I feel like I missed out on a bunch of those references because
I only came to the States in the summer, and so I would only see the weird summer.
Oh yeah, your weird army references. Yeah, that's how you find your other army brat people.
Yeah, it's 100%.
Like you'll say something, and then somebody will be like, "I remember that," and you're like, "Ah, you lived in Germany between 1984," and you know, it's like
right. But I didn't get the Where's the Beef. That wasn't my thing. I didn't get a Where's the Beef because we didn't have those ads.
You didn't. You don't know. Did they? They don't have Wendy's in Germany. Was my question.
No,
realizing that that's a silly question to ask,
especially during the 80s.
Yeah, but. And then talking about being in or out of this country reminds me to pull back to dating. A good friend of mine from college who's Indian always talked about, like, it's not pressure from her parents, but, like, she herself always wanted, she would date whoever, but always wanted to marry another Indian person, specifically a South Indian man. And it was, like, hard for me to wrap my head around, like, I'm like, oh, you're so progressive and whatever, like, from my tower of judgment. for her, so much of it was that, like he would have these same references and the same understanding of how her family functioned and, like, how growing up was in this way that I think I can't totally, understand because I'm not like a child of an immigrant and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, I think it's easier for me to think of like most of the people I meet, you know, they may or may not know Napoleon Dynamite, but they like have this similar set of like of experiences in this country. I mean, I do meet people who have different experiences because they are immigrants or grew up in different situations. But I don't know. That's another, it's just an interesting thing for also meeting love connection people of like, do you want someone that similar or not, or like what's your realm of your Venn diagram, how big can it get,
you know? In fact, to that end, Wendell and I were talking about the idea of rules, obeying them or not obeying them, and the idea I think from that standpoint of your friend where they're like, I really want to obey this rule, like this thing matters to me, it's a thing that I really think would be important, it's like a you know, creates my life, like makes order where there is none, you know, that kind of idea, versus the idea of people who like go out of their way to date people that are different from them just to like either make a statement or just to be like, surely people are different and I should start with their outside appearance as a, like, let me try out this smorgasbord of different people. And you're like, you know.
Yeah.
I don't want you to ever refer to it like that again.
It's as good
smorgasbord of people.
Yeah, let me try this smorgasbord of people.
Well, if you want to date a bunch of different people and instead of just dating people as they happen near you, but instead you're like, I've crossed off the list a tall black man. The next one I will go to is, like, that's.
I just went to, like, a literal buffet. That was all. That's the mental image.
Right, that sounds like you're eating people.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Buffet.
I think it's because the first time I heard that word was like in the Charlotte's Web. I think it was the first time I ever heard that word into that
smorgasbord.
Yeah, talking about like the food,
the rags,
So that's forever burned in my mind.
That if there's a smorgasbord, someone will die.
No, well, that it's food.
Spoiler alert, everyone. Charlotte's Web.
I never made it to the end.
Well, that's your problem.
God damn.
That's one of those what. The fuck
I'm kidding. And Wendell believed me.
I was going to say, like, we got to hang up, and I got to hug Patrick for a moment.
Oh, my God. Imagine we, like, take this moment. Patrick cries a little. Like, Brian's real awkward on the phone.
Do we have music for that? Can we just press the music for that real quick?
Patrick's just going to cry. I cannot
register what has happened.
He won the blue ribbon, right?
Wendell believed me.
He didn't know what happened at the end of Charlotte's Web, so when I spoiled he got very upset.
Got heartbroken. I can sell it with the face.
It was funny, because it's not true.
And now for Amy Explains the Joke.
It's a segment.
I appreciate it.
I pitched that as a sketch before, so as a... Patrick or Amy explain the joke.
Always.
Because sometimes we do that. We have to explain that to each other because we're not millennials.
There's that for sure.
That's another thing.
Well, outside of Charlotte's Web, I really just know Amy, I guess, but so you are happily married, or at least married, I don't know too much about your personal life, but do you feel like you and your husband are like have pretty similar backgrounds and that works for you, or have a lot of differences in your past?
I wonder. That's a good question. I am happily married, so we can use this as a reference point.
That's great. Yes. Good.
Verified.
Yeah. I mean, we're similar people. I don't know if exactly like where we grew up. We're around the same age. He's 3 years older than me. But he grew up in Texas and I grew up in Boston, so there's definitely cultural differences with that.
I imagine.
But we both lived in similar places. Like, he lived in Portland, Maine at a different time, and I also lived in Portland, Maine, so we have those things to reference sometimes. We know places similarly, even though we weren't there at the same time, and then also we both went to the same college, even though we went at different times. So we, like, have these things that we have in common. We didn't experience them at the exact same time, but we have certain, like, traditional things. Like, everybody at my college went to a Rome campus, right? So this is something we have in common.
Oh.
We both went to Rome. We both took the same Rome classes that they teach. Those kinds of things. We know we can, like, reference what it looks like on the campus because we were both there at different years, you know what I mean? But so we have a lot of similarities where we crossed paths, and that actually draws a bit of sort of like magical storytelling to our story as well, because it's like we were constantly missing each other. Every few years we were crossing paths just for a moment, and then we'd go off on our own adventures again, and then reconnected via Facebook. Oh boy.
Uh-huh.
Thank God it wasn't like Tinder, though. That would have been real upsetting.
Have you ever had someone ask you to take one of those personality tests to see if they can
the Myers Briggs?
Yeah.
ENT.
Yeah.
I've never taken one for dating. I took one for my college roommate.
Gotcha. For their like psychology class or whatever they had to take.
No, they give you that, and then that's how they decide who your roommate is.
Oh, they didn't. Maybe they.
Oh,
just,
really?
Yeah, and it was spot on. Me and my roommate are still friends. She's great.
Oh,
we lived together all 4 years. Loved each other the whole time. All
right. So Brian sounds like you know yours. What's yours? I'm just curious.
I don't. Oh. I have a couple of friends who are really big, like, into it, and they keep asking me, and I've, like, looked online for, it's hard to find, like, a free one.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I've looked online for them, so I haven't been able to do it, though. I feel like I could guess, but no, I don't. And part of the reason I'm interested is things like introvert, extrovert. I feel really strongly both at times, which I guess is not totally uncommon. Mm-hmm. So I've been interested to take it, but I have not done it because I didn't have to for any of these reasons you've enumerated.
There's a lot of pressure to being an official extrovert, though, I'll tell you, because then whenever you feel introverted, you feel bad, like you're doing something wrong, like you're not you. No shit.
No,
so
yeah, I just
the thing, and my thing's extrovert something,
that.
Whatever. And it's the one. It's whatever one that's like the most extroverted, obnoxious, crazy person. Like
I just,
that's me.
I want a college to do an experiment now where anybody who is an introvert on the tests, they tell them they're an extrovert so that they feel that way and they have to go out in the world and experience more.
Not everybody's like crazy neurotic like
I know, but I would just love to see how that worked out. Like, oh, you got 30% more people to go out in the world and be extroverted.
Interesting.
Yeah, maybe.
The perception. I mean, I definitely think that. Well, like for me, it's a lot of like where I, like what is my source of energy, and that's the part that is really so different. Like if, and a lot of it is so like I'm interested for me what knowing one or the other will do even, but like there are definitely times where I'm like, okay, I've had shows all weekend, I've been around a lot of people, like I need a day to like, you know, get some stuff done and like sit and be be in a space where I'm like, you know, can chill and like think, and I also need a lot of like, I'm very brainy, like I need some intellectual time to like sort through stuff. And then if I have too much of that, or like if I'm ever in like an argument or in an emotional place, like the place I often want to go is to be around friends or like to be around people where I can like talk through stuff or like just be felt uplifted by that. And I think those are my two poles that it depends so much on context. If I'm going to get lice from being around people or being from by myself, and it took me a long time to figure that out, and it was often hard to explain. Like, people would be like, oh, Brian needs this or Brian needs that, and like my family and my friends and stuff. And so it's been, now that I kind of understand, well, it depends how, what I've been through recently to mm-hmm. know what I need. And I think that comes up in improv too. I have learned that, like, that I have groups and I have partners that are so different in stuff like warm-ups, where like almost always what I want before a show is like to center and calm myself mm-hmm. and like find a place, like I want to play from a place of like inner calm at least. And when I'm around like a packed green room full of people like jumping their energy up, which I get people need to do that, like, but that stresses me out and I get really overwhelmed. But that's like often the default, and I know there's like a few other people who are like gonna find, like I'm gonna find in the back alley also like chilling and stretching or whatever. But yeah, it's helped me to figure out like what I need in different spaces.
Do you still get nervous energy, like heart rate pumping up before shows, or are you like that nervous energy, that anxiety? Because that's what I get. I like take my pulse before every show and it's 120. No doubt.
Really?
Yeah.
I've not taken my pulse. I definitely, it fluctuates for me. I definitely will get, so things I've noticed, like if I'm in a new space, mm-hmm. So I'm at a festival or like we just did a show in Cleveland for the first time. And, you know, I've been doing comedy since college for over 10 years. And for some reason, someone other than me booked us a show in Cleveland. my whole family came out to see the show, and I was like incredibly nervous because I was like, they're all seeing this thing that I spend a lot of time on. So stuff like that will like give me a lot of anxiety, or not anxiety, but just like that nervous butterfly right. energy. I find that I'll get it all before the show, but as soon as I go out, mm-hmm. and I've attributed this to just being on stage since I was young, like it washes away. Like I don't remember any of that feeling, and I'm just like able to get in it most of the time. We did a festival in Phoenix. It's an amazing festival, but they're in this enormous theater that even just being back in a theater with like wings right. and like side curtains and stuff, and I'm just like,
I know,
holy
right?
moly, I have to go do improv on this stage. Like, I'm not qualified for this. Like, that gave me that those nerves again. It was an amazing festival. Our show was fine, but like, so those things keep me up. But I think, you know, like my monthly show and stuff, those things I do a lot, like mm-hmm. I'm much more able to be in a place of like, I got this, like, it's not that I still get nervous, I think, but it's not as much where like my heart is beating in my throat as much as like, yeah, these are my friends. Like, I love doing this with them. Like, this is a great chance to do a thing I love. And so that like gets me. And usually I'm better at being able to, like, I know where I can go and where I can sit and how I can, like, get what I need before. So mm-hmm. I get a little bit less of that for the regular stuff.
When you talk to your students and they ask you that question, what kind of advice do you give them about it? Like, how do they deal
about
with
nervousness?
Yeah, and, like, how to get over it to get on stage.
Yeah. I don't think I've found good advice yet, because most of what I'll say is, like, You're going to do a ton of these shows over the course of your, you know, time doing improv. And so nervous is just a thing that you, like, A, I will say it's good that you're nervous, because that means you care about this and yeah. you'll do a lot. And so over time, you know, you'll feel less nervous, but I don't even know if that's true. But yeah, like generally I do talk about warming up the way you want to play, which is a thing. I'm not sure if I got that a new movement, but I definitely love the idea of like warming up the way you want to play. So that's, I guess, more with teams I coach, certainly. But so in the classes, I'll probably have them set up already with warm-ups that are like about what we're talking about in that class or thing about in the class show, and getting people to go out, hopefully from that place of calm. Like, one thing I'll do very often in my classes is like right before the show, we'll all go around and share just a one word that's like a feeling that we want to feel during the show, so people can kind of have that point of focus. It's less about, you know, I want to do character work, but it's just like, I want to feel, you know, proud, or I want to feel calm, or, you know, people have all different things, but a kind of focal feeling and energy. I'm dancing around because I don't have a good question. But those are some of the things I do. But I don't really think I have an answer for that yet.
That word that they're describing, they want to feel, is that them as a performer or for the character or a character that they do? So is it I want to feel, you know, pride as a performer out there, or is it I want to feel pride as a character? I'm just curious if that's
I guess I don't make it super clear, but I think of it from a performer perspective.
Okay.
It's kind of almost like a mantra, like what's a thing that a target you want to set for yourself,
right?
And I'm also big on like affirmations and mantras, like, you know, it's not gonna in that one moment change a lot, but I think like getting yourself in a mental space of you know, feeling pride or feeling calm or whatever, like putting that out into the world kind of helps guide people to be a bit more in that headspace than in the headspace they would normally be in, which is like nervousness, terror, whatever else is floating around in their head. So just flipping those to like positive words, aspirational words, I think is a positive mental.
Think I'm going to try that out next time, because we do the thing you mentioned where it's, you know, like in the show I want to, and then you name something that you're working on, but it's not necessarily attached to a feeling or anything like that. It's just, you know, which is in a way saying I'm bad at this thing, so, you know, right before you go on stage, that's kind of a version of that.
And I don't think that's bad. Like, I think to me the goal of that is like having one singular focus, so you're cutting out the work to like I have to be good at everything. Mm-hmm. I think that's also positive. Yeah, mine is definitely more from a hippie perspective of, you know, getting yourself in an emotional mindset that is positive and not right. facing fear or negativity.
Yeah, I also just forget that thing that I said I'm going to work on as soon as I get on stage. So I'm curious.
I tend to also.
Yeah, so I'm curious if I can latch on maybe to an emotion a little bit better, you know, to work that out.
I think it'd be easier if I was like, I want to feel sad. And then I just go out there and my character's choices are always sad. Like, just no matter what happens in the scene, it's like, yeah, I mean, I guess I got $1 million. A lot of work.
I also want to see that from the perspective of you as a performer just feeling sad about the performance. Like, you force yourself into a terrible spot here, Amy.
I want to feel really sad about myself.
You're just doing stand-up at that point.
You're right.
I want to stay anxious all night.
I'm doing two level jokes. It's like one joke for the audience, the other joke for my fellow performers.
I'm usually doing
that. I'm just that much of a dick that I'm like, guys, my whole performance is a meta performance for you guys.
You love it.
Although I will say that touches on, I know it got light again for a minute, and I'm going to bring it back down, but it touches on to me.
Please.
Part of the value of it is just sharing that with the group so that other people can kind of say like, oh, this is the place this person wants to be at. So if there's anything you can do to, you know,
right, help them out.
Help that out. Yeah. I always think that's a bit helpful. Which is the other reason to share the other one. While we're on, I forget who asked me that, but does anyone else have a good question for when students especially ask about nervousness?
Or
a good answer?
A thing to say to them? Yeah. I haven't been teaching, so I've got nothing there.
I mean, I usually just tell people to have fun with their friends. Like, my entire philosophy of teaching level one is to spend 8 weeks making these people friends with each other. Because you're generally going to have a good time with your friends, no matter whether things are going the way you expect them or not, because they're your friends. And you trust them to kind of have your back. So even if everything kind of like, you're building up this joke and you're like, yeah, I'm going to be really funny. And then it just falls flat. They can have your back and make you look better. And that's, you know, how I tell them to try to do it. And honestly, from a sort of like high ideals of improv, that for me is like the number one thing. It's like if I'm watching a show and it looks like the troupe is friends and having a good time with each other, I don't care what happens in any of the scenes. I don't care if I got three beats. I don't care if I laugh. I don't care if anything. If they look like they're having a great time, that's how it's like A+. You know, whereas...
Yeah, I like that a lot.
So it makes it a lot easier. It's less intense about like, if you're not hilarious, by the way, there's SNL people in the audience.
No.
And they're going to decide whether Austin's a worthy city. They'll never come back again if you're not funny. Like, what? No. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. Well, and that point also makes me think of, like, I guess what I'm also hearing in that is that it flips the idea of pressure. Like, you sort of put the pressure on yourself. And I do think one other thing about those, especially those early class shows, like, I mostly teach a duo elective, and then I also taught our 102 class, which is sort of, it's like the second class. It's still considered a 100 level. And at those shows, you know, everyone who's coming to see you are still at that point, your friends, your family,
right,
come out.
Supportive people.
And I think that idea that, like, of all the audiences you're going to have, these people are on your side. They're going to cheer for you no matter what happens. They're going to buy you a drink. So I think, if that helps diffuse that nervousness, that's probably good to remind folks of.
Well, to be totally honest with you, when I have level one recitals, I actually go out and chastise the audience up front and inform them that they, even though they thought they were coming to a show, they have a job to do, and their job is to support my lovely students who work so hard, and they better laugh damn loud and clap and sound like they really care, or else I'm going to come back and get them.
Well, yeah, what really started selling it was Wendell and I will stand on the sides of the stage with iron pipes, and we'll just hit our hands with them.
Pack of cigarettes rolled up in my sleeve, just like a real street tough.
They don't know if we're going to beat them up or start Grease the Musical up.
They're fucking clapper. I swear to God, Grease Lightning. We're
gonna just start a lot of smoking and curse words.
I think I've said it before, like, a lot of the pressure for me personally comes on not what the audience is going to think of me, but what the other performers are, and that's where a lot of my anxiety comes from, is just like I don't want to fail for these people that I respect, you know, because if you're on stage with people you don't respect, what are you doing up there with people you don't respect, you know, like, you should be with you should be in a troupe that is of people that you think are good performers and will help you grow, and
I definitely get that, and I think that one thing that I've been trying I've been trying more with some teams I coach, and I think about it with teams that I play on is, like, I think certainly, like, 5 years ago, there was, in my experience, a sort of, it was harder to have kind of, for me at least, like, open, vulnerable conversations with my teams, and I think that's certainly changing, at least here. But, like, there was much more of this culture in Pittsburgh, like, you don't give each other notes, which translated into, we don't talk about things amongst each other without a coach, like, going through everything. And certainly that's changed in ways, like, sometimes, sorry, this is a long walk, but, like, sometimes a coach doesn't see things or has their own perspective that, you know, if there's a misogynistic comment or something like that, like, sometimes being able to say, like, to me, it's not a note to say, like, the way that line or that thing felt to me was this way, or not even saying that, but saying, like, I felt blank during this set, like, that's just something you can put out, and I've really valued those.
Yeah.
So one thing that your comment struck in me is that I think oftentimes if someone on a team is saying, like, oh, man, I felt so nervous. I felt I let you guys down. I felt this thing wasn't funny. I'll often just be like, can we first just ask the group, like, who felt that way? Like, they weren't being supported. And almost always, everyone's just like, no, I felt great. I felt that thing was really funny. Like, I felt you were doing a great job. And I think that doesn't negate that person's feeling bad, but it often is really helpful to hear, like, man, like, no, we didn't feel that. Like, we felt great. I felt I could really use that piece of info you added or whatever. It's, like, so good to hear.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not always that people are having those conversations for a variety of, you know, good intentioned reasons.
Yeah, and, like, think about, okay, when's the last time somebody, like, really failed you? Like,
in any, life?
Like, your other performers on stage, when did you ever go, like, failed?
I feel like actually I've had quite a few of those.
Yeah, I mean, and it really gets at you?
Yeah, but it's more, I'm more concerned about me doing that to somebody else.
Oh, like, I know, I was just saying, I was just trying to, like, perspective on, like, I don't know that anybody, like, anybody fucks up on stage and I'm there, it's like, let's just keep going. Like,
I've had some real bad sets.
Yeah.
And it's just like, someone doesn't play well with me. You know, and it wasn't necessarily a choice that I was with that person for a particular thing. Like, And that I think that happens to people early on in improv, where if you're in a class or, you know, you get in some sort of house troupe or something, you may get put with someone who's a good performer, they're a nice person, but you two don't read each other well or whatever. Yeah, yeah. And they keep doing things that isn't helping you as a performer, and you keep doing things that isn't helping them as a performer.
Mm. They keep just not drinking that poison coffee.
real early on, yeah, getting no's is...
They keep, like, picking up a penny right when the guillotine swings by.
Why are you ruining my jokes?
I don't know. I think anybody who's played with me will probably say I'm the straight man in most of the scenes, just because that my personality defaults to trying to make, which is my own fault, I need to work on it, but trying to make sense of things. Mm. In scenes, and so if a person's...
And you said you've been on teams with folks that you generally just don't mesh, or you feel like you're not meshing with or getting off the ground with?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty early on with the improv stuff, where, you know, I would join a troupe that's kind of like a mashup of, hey, these are other students that you want to do a thing, so we're going to make a...
If you keep Patrick talking, I think I can reverse engineer who he's talking about. He's no, like giving me like, no.
Just, like name little, them on the I,
yeah,
no,
yeah.
Just
no, that will be,
like,
that will like, be okay, edited
I totally,
out.
All right, I can look up who was like first couple of classmates were. You know.
Uh-huh, well, I mean, there was a. Uh-huh. There was,
yeah, but I totally let so like the way I relate is like I do agree. Like I think that missteps happen a lot, and I think to me the process of it's not about did a misstep happen, but it's like what do we do with that and how do we grow from that? Like even this past weekend, Saturday night, last night, I was in a show and towards the end of the show, in this part of the show that often goes weird for me, like I said, I'm not like a comedy person. I'm a other kind of comedy comes from other places person, and like, there's a part that's a lot of like quick scenes, and I often will get pulled into something and just like literally don't remember, or like I'm not clocking what they're pulling me in for.
Right.
Mm. So we were doing this scene and with someone who's on my team, and she's great and I love her, and like I could tell, I thought she pulled me into the scene, so I was going with that, and then I like literally just didn't know what she was doing, and so we like improvised, it was fun, and it built into something, we got some laughs, and like after the show I was just like, hey, what were you pulling me out for? Like, I could not, I'm so sorry, I couldn't tell what it was. And she was like, oh, you're doing this thing. And so I did this reaction, and then I just rolled with it. So like, we kind of broke down the communication problem, and we realized we actually both were in the same scene. We just didn't realize it until we did a different scene. It's hard to explain over the phone, but like, I guess that's all I'm getting at is like, are we able to, after the show, A, both realize that something weird happened and talk about it a little bit so that over time we can grow to either get it more often or at least not in our minds be like, I'm never walking out with her again because we don't get stuff. Like, oh, that was just a weird thing. That's going to happen.
Do you guys have a coach for you as well? Because I feel like, so if I'm in a troupe that we have good, you know, interpersonal communication skills, then, you know, the coach mainly just helps us in with particular, I don't know, issues that they see in our shows and whatnot. But then sometimes the coach is able to say, like, they're able to be the outside perspective that's like, there's a thing that needs to change and there's no way to bring it up without having an issue in the troupe.
Yeah.
Yeah, those happen sometimes.
Yeah.
And one thing that I find happens a lot is that instead of addressing problems, I'll see problems exist for years at a time.
Yeah.
Like, there'll be troops where there's just one person who just keeps messing with everything, but everyone's like, but maybe it'll be okay this time. And then it isn't ever, but they're like, but he's so nice. And then, you know, it's hard to do it, especially because, you know, with improv, like, we want to be the nice guys. We want... We're improvisers, man. Our whole deal is yes and. Like, we don't want to know. We don't want to give any level of no. But in reality, like, in the real sense of being a performer and actually getting a solid troupe, there has to be plenty of no. Yeah. There's to be lots of no's.
Yeah.
Every time I have to say no to somebody, I both hate it and love it at the same time. I hate it because I have to deal with this person in front of me who's, like, upset that I gave them a no. But I'm happy because I feel confident in my own decision that I wasn't going to allow somebody to do something that I didn't think they were ready for. Or if they are trying to make some change and I'm like, not everybody's down with that. You can't just unilaterally do stuff like that when I'm a coach or whatever. But, you know.
Yeah. Are you, you're talking about real life no's or on stage no's?
Real life.
Real life no's.
Yeah. Gotcha. Oh, yeah. Those are well needed. Yeah. I mean, both are needed, in my opinion. But, yeah, I'm totally, totally clocking you there. Yeah.
Yeah, no, real life. Yeah, no. I wouldn't do any no's on stage. Part of the previous philosophy I was talking about earlier, where it's like, as long as everyone's having a good time, part of that for me is just like, whatever, it doesn't matter what I thought was happening. If somebody says something else, I'm like, that's it now. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. If I walked in and I was like, Mr. President, listen, we have to talk about these codes. What are you going to do with them? How are you going to make that decision? They're like, listen, me and 47 kangaroos are going to have a pajama party. Can you hand me the soup? And I'd be like, yes, sir, here's the soup.
You're right.
Like, I'm not going to be like, but wait, we have to deal with the codes. Like, right. No, we've gone way past that now. I'm like, where are the kangaroos going to keep the soup? You know, whatever. Like, I'm immediately like, dropped everything I've just said. And I'm like, uh-huh. Yes.
I still am unsure of when to drop a thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I'm too etch-a-sketch. I go immediately. I'm just like, nothing I said matters at all.
Because I've had discussions of like, well, if they do something like that, in essence, they've knowed you. Right? Like.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's just like, and if you have a troupe mate who continues to do that, they're Mr. No. And you like.
Yeah.
And then at a point, I'm just a stubborn a-hole, so I'm just like, nah, man, I'm sticking to my guns on this one. You do
well,
it every
sometimes
time.
Sometimes they think they're making it better. Like, I've had conversations, that example that I made was, like, insane, you know what I mean? Like, I wasn't, clearly that's not a thing, but it'd be like...
Well, it has been. I've been in that exact scene.
Yeah.
You were there for it and saw it go down.
Right, but you know what I mean? Like, there are just some moments where it switches from being, like, a specific setup, and all of a sudden it's slightly different or whatever, and you just have to go with the flow.
Wouldn't it be so much better if there was just actual improv villains, like guys that just sign up just to fucking ruin everybody's.
Hey, pitch that. That's a great.
Like in wrestling, you know what I mean? Like they're
have
always
you,
the
have
bad
Have you done
guy?
That?
This well, is like
that
no,
exercise where you just try to do everything
do
you
the
can
worst
to ruin a person's scene.
Yeah.
But like that's the only way to do it without causing real drama.
That it was our our teacher's. He was just like, "Hey, you guys seem really worried about fucking this up, and it's impossible to fuck this up." And he's like, "Yeah." And then assigned like, "Hey, you're the guy who's gonna mess up the scene. Go try to mess it up." And you guys are all good enough improvisers that you can make the scene work.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a good exercise.
That's the important part to me too. Like even hearing you talk about like, oh, there's now you have this guy who's always saying no. Like, I think that's important, and that's important to talk to that guy about. But you're still focusing on that guy. Like to me, the only thing you control in the scene is you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so if you're getting into your mind as soon as that no happens, like, oh, this dude fucked up, he's to blame, right? Like,
oh,
the scene
because
of this guy, like, you were already sunk, right? Like, you are no longer improvising or listening, and, like, really all you can do is say, like, that's out there, now what can I do to, you know, like that's in the scene. That's a thing that happened.
Right.
That's the reality of this scene.
Oh, so
now,
much.
Like, how can I get myself back to a place of having fun and building this thing up? And that's so hard. I don't say it like it's easy. Like, that takes a lot of practice and experience having people fuck your shit up and doing it. But it's like, I think that's a more, that's the positive mindset to like try to flip to.
Yeah. Amen, man. Amen.
I mean, like, just. You can key their car later, you know, just like.
Oh no, I don't. Yeah, I don't want to give the impression that I'm like
keying people's cars. It's totally fine. Wendell and I will help.
No, there's a million different ways to like
key a car.
Yeah, like. you know, to have justice, but like not.
No,
have
yeah,
to
justice. Be accountable. I do, like if we're if,
oh,
if it's a
justice
rehearsal,
doesn't exist, everyone.
If it's a rehearsal, I you know this is a different story, but like on stage, you yeah, 100%, you keep going and you try to make it work.
Oh, I thought you were gonna be but like on stage, you pull you, out a knife and you stab them multiple times.
I mean, I don't have a good I don't have a universal. Example. Well, I don't think there is a universal example because to me the answer is always how do you keep yourself inspired and having fun, and that's different right. for every person. I think a lot of that is like reflection on what's fun for you. But like for me, an example that I do that is different from Amy. So like Amy, you were like, I always say yes. Like I am sometimes, and like this is I wouldn't do with the team as much, but like in jams and stuff. Like one thing I'll do a lot with questions, if a person's asking questions in a like fearful way, like they don't want to add information, I will sometimes get to a point that I will only respond to questions with questions. Like that's fun for me. Mm-hmm. Like if they're asking a bunch of questions, I will just basically play the short form game questions. I'll just ask questions back until it's either fun because we're only asking questions or they start answering my question
right.
and they start like having to give information back. Like that's a little trick that I do that's really, in my view, encouraging. Like it's helping them add information, or if it's not, then it's just a weird fun thing full of questions.
Right.
Like that's one example in my mind of like flipping it back to fun without stamping my feet around.
You're a little rule breaker. Trouble.
Man, tetherball and volleyball.
Oh my! I love that.
Oh my
metaphor.
God! Earlier you mentioned that you had a monthly show. When is that show? Where is that show? Tell us about it. We can tell people to go watch it.
I do. I have so my like regularly scheduled show is my group Irony City opens for this show called Dinner with the Nolans, which is the first Saturday of every month. The two of the founders of the Arcade Comedy Theater take an improv couple out to dinner, and then they improvise a show with that couple. We just won Best of the Berg, voted by readers of a paper here in Pittsburgh. And it's an amazing show that's been running for, I think this is our third year, and my group is the opening act. We've been opening for them for two of those 3 years. So that's been really fun. And we're there, yeah, first Saturday of the month at 8. And then I'm in a bunch of other stuff, which you can check out at brianmgray.com, BrianmGray.com. My shows and a bunch of other jazz about me.
Right on. What was your troupe's name again that was the opening act of Dinner with the Nolans?
We are Irony City, which is a name that does
Irony
not play
City.
Outside of Pittsburgh. It is there's a
Iron
cheap-ass
Iron
beer
Iron
here City. Called Iron City.
Right.
Which we used to serve at our shows. But it is a
even better.
It is a pun on Iron City. But that is the name of our group. And we just celebrated our 10-year anniversary. We had a big show.
10-year anniversary?
Can you believe it? I know.
You really say 10 years? Wow. With that troupe,
yeah,
really?
Officially, we've been, we formed the group 11 years ago, but we had 8 months before our first show because a lot of people had never done improv before. So, yeah, 10 years since our first show.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Awesome. And
hard to believe.
You said the theater is the RK Comedy Theater. R is in Richard, K is in King?
Or no, arcade.
Arcade, like video game.
Pew,
yeah.
Pew. I was pew, like, pew. Wendell heard it, yeah. Pew, pew, pew. Ah, yes, the pew, pew, pew comedy theater.
Yes, laser theaters.
And that's your home base? Is that where you also teach?
The old Nickelodeon.
It is. Yeah, I teach there. I perform. I do a bunch there. Yeah, definitely. I perform. There's a bunch going on. I perform some other places. And I'm the education director of the Pittsburgh Comedy Festival, which is coming up in a month, depending on when this is released. That's going on up here. So always a lot happening in Pittsburgh. And I would love for any and all people listening to come and check out Pittsburgh. There's so much going on. You know, reach out to us if you're here. Come see some shows. Come check out what we have. There's a really thriving scene going on here. Improv, stand-up, sketch, lots of stuff happening. So come visit Pittsburgh.
That's wonderful. I'm so glad. I don't know if I mentioned it to you before, but we had talked to a couple other people from the Pennsylvania area, and so it is interesting to hear all sorts of different, you know, groups doing different kinds of projects, but that the whole state is just pulsing with creativity and loveliness. So that's wonderful.
It is such an exciting time for comedy. And I've definitely been out to Philly. They have such amazing stuff going on. We got a lot of Philly folks out for the festival. I know we've had a number of people go out to the Harrisburg Festival, which goes on, has been going on for a number of years here. There's a whole lot going on. And I'm excited. I think you're also talking to some more Pittsburgh people in the, I don't know, months to come. And I'm excited to listen to those as well.
Yeah. I'm excited to talk to different people and see what their experiences are. I appreciate you sitting down and talking with us, Brian. I've had a great conversation with you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was great to talk to you and meet you all virtually. I look forward to seeing you again in Austin.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of your evening.
You too. Have a great night, y'all.
You as well.
Take care.
Hey, marry me,
bye.
Michelle.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Yes But Why podcast.